Welcome to this month's installment of Author Audio, brought to you by Quality Progress Magazine and ASQ, the global voice of quality. My name is Mark Edmond, and I'm the Associate Editor of Quality Progress. This month, I'm speaking with the authors of April 2013's cover story, Paving the Way. In the article, Christine Anderson Cook and Connie Bohr outline the basics of seven data collection strategies and how they relate to the define, measure, analyze, improve, and control methodology. Using these techniques can strengthen how you handle your investigations and analyses into processes and products, and ultimately help you make better decisions. The two authors definitely know what they're talking about when it comes to statistics and quality. Both are regular contributors to QP's monthly statistics roundtable column. When she's not writing for the magazine, Christine is a research scientist in the Statistical Sciences Group at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. Connie is a professor in the School of Mathematical and Natural Sciences at Arizona State University West, and she's the former editor of an ASQ publication, another ASQ publication, Quality Engineering. Thanks for joining us today to offer some highlights from the article.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're delighted to have the opportunity to share some of our work with the Quality Progress audience, and we hope that the readers will find this helpful.
Good. First off, give listeners a bit more about your backgrounds. Christine, why don't you start off?
Great. So I've been here in Los Alamos for 9 years, and before coming here, I was a professor in the Department of Statistics at Virginia Tech. Projects that I'm working on here at Los Alamos include predicting the reliability of complex systems, understanding failure mechanisms in supercomputers, and combining first principle science and engineering computer models with observed data. My research interests include statistical engineering, design of experiments, reliability, and multiple objective optimization.
Okay, Connie?
As you stated earlier, I'm a professor in the School of Math and Natural Sciences on the West Campus of ASU, but my PhD is in industrial engineering with an emphasis in quality and reliability. And I'm interested in new research and applications in experimental design, quality control, measurement systems analysis, as well as undergraduate education in statistics. I'm currently learning about quality in healthcare through a sabbatical that I'm doing in the Office of Performance Improvement at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas.
Okay. So for readers, go over the data collection strategies you highlighted in the article.
Sure. What we decided to do is to highlight seven different data collection types. And those seven types are observational studies, monitoring techniques, process capability, measurement system capability, sampling, designed experiments, and then lastly something we called complementary data and information.
And so these categories aren't really mutually exclusive. There's a lot of connections between these different types. For example, you might have a measurement system study, and that involves running a designed experiment. But we thought that those seven categories might provide a good organizational structure for talking through things.
Can you give a real quick description of each for us?
Sure. So observational studies occur in a lot of different applications. The data have usually been collected without any direct manipulation of the system, and it can be helpful for giving insights into the process and product characteristics. By looking at already available data, that gives us a good starting point for investigating the problems, but we should be a little bit careful about using that kind of data for making final decisions. Data mining is an area that seems to be really growing, and it's a special case of observational studies, where we're often looking at very big data sets.
Okay.
Right, and then also, say, monitoring techniques, one of our topics. Very useful for control and monitoring processes to determine if the process is stable. The most commonly used techniques are the traditional control charts, Schuhart charts, monitoring a single quality characteristic, like the process mean or fraction non-conforming. But through the years, the use and application of monitoring techniques has expanded, grown well beyond the manufacturing floor where they began. and beyond just monitoring single quality characteristics. Today, we monitor public health data, multivariate data of all types, computer intrusion activities, biological events. Then, once you've got that process, we next went into what we call process capability. And as the name states, it really aids in determining if the process is capable, whereas monitoring techniques looked at stability, process capability looks at the capability of the process. But what we mean by that is that the process performs as it's intended to do. That's what we want to make sure. Are we making product to customer expectations or specifications, for example? That can be very important to be able to determine that type of capability in real time. And then right along with that, then we thought, well, we need to know something about measurement system capability. And that's to determine if the measurement system is really doing what it's intended to do, where the measurement system may consist of, you know, people, such as we might often call them operators, the measuring device being used, for example. And this measurement system needs to be investigated regularly to make sure that the measurements that you're really using, that you're plotting in your control chart, that you're using for other information, are correct and that they are due to the process itself and not just the measurement system, measuring device, or the person taking the measurement.
So the fifth category is sampling, and the goal of that is to determine the characteristics of a population of interest by examining only a subset of it. So we've just recently finished the political season where there were a lot of election polls, and we were able to ask a relatively small subset of people their voting preferences, and from that make an overall prediction about what the whole country was thinking at a given time. Sampling also works well for processes and products, where carefully examining a small number of units can lead to broader conclusions at a fraction of the cost and time expended. The sixth category is designed experiments, where we can examine products or processes by actively manipulating the inputs and then observing one or more responses. A couple of key advantages to this type of data collection include being able to establish causality and also being able to examine specific combinations of the inputs in the ranges of interest. Designed experiments are very important for determining which inputs are key drivers of changes to the responses. The last category includes softer information and data, and we've called that complementary data. These can be comprised of qualitative summaries, descriptions of processes, root causes of failure modes, and so on. Descriptive summaries of this information are available through a variety of quality tools, and Quality Progress has featured several articles on these tools in the last few years.
So for this article, why did you decide to make the connection to DMAIC?
Well, so both of us are very enthusiastic about an emerging movement called statistical engineering. And this focuses on providing guidance for statisticians and people who use statistics about how to select and use different statistical tools for solving large, unstructured, complex problems. By presenting the data collection strategies in the context of the DMAIC process, we hope to provide some insights about which stages typically involve which kinds of data collection.
Yeah, and as a result, the Six Sigma DMAIC approach to problem solving, as you know, is very popular. And we thought that this would help people identify with the different data collection strategies and just how they might be used.
Can you give a brief example of using these strategies together, connecting them together and solving a problem or improving a situation?
Sure. As a very simple example, suppose that we're trying to reduce the defect rate for the production of medical equipment. We might start with some observational data that we already have that shows what's currently known about the defect rate, and then use a flow diagram with how the parts are made in the manufacturing process. So the flow diagram is part of the complementary information that we have available. Based on the defect rates and our understanding of the process, we could then determine if there might be an opportunity for improvement.
Right, and before jumping right in and adjusting the process, if you feel something's going on, we'd want to first examine the measurement system that's being used to make sure that it's stable, unbiased, and capable. We could then monitor the process with a Schuhart or maybe a time-weighted control chart to determine an accurate summary of that stability of the process. Once we know that the process is stable, then we can compare the natural uncertainty of the process with what is required based on customer requirements using the process capability metrics that many people know.
And then using information about failure modes, supplementary data, and expert knowledge, we could again use these complementary data information, maybe with an affinity or fishbone diagram, to determine what factors to evaluate for improving the process. And then a series of experiments could be designed to measure the effect of different inputs, prioritize the ones which are most influential on the response, and then an ideal combination of factor settings could be identified that optimizes the process. Once these settings have been confirmed, then the new capability of the process could again be measured with process monitoring methods to quantify and maintain the gains made.
When people use any one of these approaches, what are some of the common pitfalls or mistakes that they tend to make?
So one of the key differences between observational studies and designed experiments are the kinds of conclusions that you can draw from each of them. Because we're not actively manipulating the inputs for observational data, it's possible that patterns we're seeing in the data may not be directly related. For example, in a manufacturing process, we might see improved performance in our process when the temperature is higher. And because of that, we might assume that temperature is causing this improvement. When in reality, it may be that the daytime running temperatures in the plants are higher and the daytime operators have more seniority and more experience, and that's actually what's driving higher quality parts. So making decisions based on observational data could potentially lead to some unsubstantiated conclusions.
All right, and another other pitfall that we see when we look at, sometimes when people want to make changes or do something with a process, they might, or they think they need to make a change, they might go right into doing a process capability study before checking that their measurement system is adequate or that the process itself is in statistical control. And what we also find with process capability and measurement systems analysis that there's sometimes an over-reliance on single metrics and usual rules of thumb to determine the capability of the process. In addition, using the most appropriate methods for estimating variability can often be very confusing. There's many formulas out there, and trying to identify which one can depend on how often samples are collected, the sampler subgroup sizes, the number of factors involved in the process, all those, for example. And we wanted to note that, you know, if the reader would like more information about this, these types of metrics and some of the pitfalls and the rules of thumb that might be useful, they might want to refer to or read the Statistics Roundtable column that also appears in the April issue.
Good point. Okay.
Okay, so in sampling studies, there's a need to make a direct connection between the population that we're trying to answer questions about and what kinds of units were actually drawn. So a really obvious example of this would be if we performed a customer survey and we're interested in satisfaction level, and then the sample is drawn exclusively from customers that phone into a complaint hotline. The satisfaction level measured probably has little to do with the overall satisfaction level for all of the product owners if we sample in that way. A less dramatic example of this might be to just sample product in a production process from only one segment of overall production, maybe just from one line or from one shift or from one plant. But the results would be the same as the customer survey example, where a non-representative sample could give some misleading results.
Right, and when we talk about, say, designed experiments, there are many different types of designed experiments. Some are designed for identifying which inputs are important. Those are often referred to as screening designs. Some experiments are designed to optimize the process after the key inputs have been identified, and we refer to those as response surface designs. And finally, there are some confirmation experiments that we want to use to verify that the input combinations that we identified earlier perform as expected. So in essence, you know, using the wrong kind of designed experiment could really lead to an inefficient or incorrect inefficient design, inefficient results, or lead to incorrect conclusions.
So each of these strategies you've talked about, you've outlined, seem to have so much complexity. Do you have any suggestions for someone who's just getting started?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, our purpose in this article, we know it really just scratches the surface on each of these topics. Our goal was not to tell everyone what they needed to know about each of the topics, but rather to describe some of the basics and some examples and give starting points for how to dig more deeply into the right data collection strategy and with as many references as we thought would be important and useful for the readership.
So data is really at the heart of all decision making, and so if you think of data as a set of tools to solve problems, our goal is to give a quick overview of some of the different kinds of tools that there are out there. And so when someone's faced with a problem that should involve some data or solving a problem in a data-driven way, it's a bit easier to tell if you need a hammer or a screwdriver. And also understanding what the options are for data collection, that might point into some new areas where additional data could be investigated and could help solve the problem.
Right, and you know, building that connection between data and decisions is critical for a really good understanding, and also being able to justify choices in some quantitative way. We hope that this overview will be helpful to see what tools are out there and how to get started with using the tools effectively.
Well, I thank both of you for carving out a few minutes to explain things, to just start scratching that surface and give readers a few highlights from the cover article.
Well, thank you for allowing us to do this.
Yeah, thank you. We both enjoyed the chance. So we just found out that Connie and I will actually be giving a presentation on this at the Fall Technical Conference in October in San Antonio, Texas. And so that's a conference that's jointly sponsored by the American Statistical Association and the American Society for Quality. So there'll be another opportunity to have a little more detailed discussion about this topic at that event.
So again, if you can find the feature article Paving the Way in April 2013's Quality Progress magazine, and be sure to check out an expanded version of the article at our website, www.qualityprogress.com. The online version contains more details, more examples, more resources to draw from if something piques your interest. So this is Mark Edmond of Quality Progress magazine, and thanks for listening.